even if you are new to the Old Testament, it is essential that you know that the God who created the world, that we read about in the opening chapters of the first book of the Bible, was deeply, deeply disturbed that those who were created in his image to see and display his glory fell short of the glory of God when they sinned. So God formed a people that the Old Testament speaks of who would see his glory, who would know his presence, and that through these people and through their practices, through their behaviors, through their worship, through their words, through their family relationships, through their witness, the world would see the rule of God. To give you a little window into the longing of God's heart for this to be so, one has only to hear something of the words of Moses, who is appointed as one of the leaders of his people during some difficult times. Moses has met with God to receive from God instructions on how the people should live under his rule in the real world. And he comes back from a short time away and finds the people have made golden calves and are worshiping the gods of the nations around them. God is furious, and Moses is disturbed. And in that moment, he prays and speaks to God. Moses says to the Lord, "You have been telling me, lead these people, but you have not let me know whom you will send with me. You have said, 'I know you by name, and you have found favor with me.' If you are pleased with me, teach me your ways, so I may know you and continue to find favor with you. Remember that this nation is your people." And then the Lord replies with words which are important as we will come to the book of Daniel. The Lord replied, "My presence will go with you, and I will give you rest." Then Moses said to him, "If your presence does not go with us, do not send us up from here. How will anyone know that you are pleased with me and with your people unless you go with us? What else will distinguish me and your people from all the other people on the face of the earth?" And the Lord said to Moses, "I will do the very thing you have asked, because I am pleased with you and I know you by name." Then Moses said, "Show me your glory." And the Lord said, "I will cause my goodness to pass in front of you, and I will proclaim my name, the Lord, in your presence. I will have mercy on whom I will have mercy, and I will have compassion on whom I will have compassion." But he said, "You cannot see my face, for no one may see me and live." This present glory of God was what was to distinguish the Old Testament people of God from all others. That they would look at this people and say, "Wow, there is a real God presence." And they would look at this people and they would see the characteristics of God encompassed in the word glory. As we come to the New Testament, it should not surprise you that in promising his presence, we read these words about the coming of Jesus in John 1. "The Word," speaking of Jesus, "became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son, who came from the Father, full of grace and truth." So what did Jesus display of God's glory? Amongst other qualities of God, God's grace and God's truth. And then we read, "Out of Jesus' fullness we have all received grace in place of grace already given. For the law was given through Moses, grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. No one has ever seen God, but the one and only Son, who is himself God and is in closest relationship with the Father, has made him known." So we see that in the Old Testament, God desired for the world to know His present glory, and that in Jesus Christ, one quality of His rule is that people would know His present glory. So we come to a time as we enter into the book of Daniel that is a very dark time. It's a time where the people have so tired God by failing to live in His presence, by rejecting His glory and turning to all the gods around them of the nations. The prophets had repeatedly warned the people to come back to God. Kings, the few that there were who sought after God, had urged the people to renew their commitment to God. But as we now enter into chapter 1 of Daniel, we see that God has had enough. And I want to read for you with you this first chapter and invite you to take a Bible with you that has the Old Testament in it so you can follow along. And what I want to do with you this morning is to focus from everything in this chapter on three ways God demonstrates His rule with respect to His present glory, with respect to His presence that displays His glory. And I think it will lead to some very practical helps as we think of living under the rule of Christ. So follow along with me as we read in Daniel 1. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, which would have been about 605 BC, Nebuchadnezzar, who was in his first year of rule, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. This was the first of three times he came knocking. The third time, he actually destroyed the temple and wiped out the city. And the Lord delivered Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, along with some of the articles from the temple of God. Now, this is history, and it's important that you not miss what I've just shared with you as to the emotion behind this. What was the temple of God to display? The present glory of God. But Nebuchadnezzar takes some of the articles from the temple of God. These he carried off to the temple of his god, Marduk, in Babylonia, and put in the treasure house of his god. That's how the book of Daniel begins. Then the king ordered Ashpenaz, chief of his royal officials, to bring into the king's service some of the Israelites from the royal family and the nobility. Young men, without any physical defect, handsome, showing aptitude for every kind of learning, well informed, quick to understand, and qualified to serve in the king's palace. He was to teach them the language and literature of the Babylonians. The king assigned them a daily amount of food and wine from the king's table. They were to be trained under the system for 3 years, and after that, they were to enter the king's service. Among those who were chosen were some from Judah, the southern kingdom that had just been taken by Nebuchadnezzar, the first deportation of which Daniel was included. Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. The chief official gave them new names after their gods, to Daniel the name Belteshazzar, to Hananiah Shadrach, to Mishael Meshach, and to Azariah Abednego. But Daniel resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine, because it had been offered to their idols and to their other gods. And he asked the chief official for permission not to defile himself this way. Now God had caused the official to show favor and compassion to Daniel, but the official told Daniel, "I'm afraid of my lord the king." And if you know the rest of the book of Daniel, the king was prone to cut people's heads off, so he had reason to be afraid. "Why should he see you looking worse than the other men your age? The king would then have my head because of you." Everyone knew that about Nebuchadnezzar. Daniel then said to the guard, whom the chief official had pointed over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, "Please test your servants for 10 days. Give us nothing but vegetables to eat and water to drink. Now, this sermon is not promoting vegetarianism. That's not the point. So don't get lost on that point. It was that they didn't want to defile themselves with food offered to idols. Then compare our appearance with that of the young men who eat the royal food and treat your servants in accordance with what you see. So he agreed to this and tested them for 10 days. At the end of the 10 days, they looked healthier and better nourished than any of the young men who ate the royal food. So the guard took away their choice food and the wine they were to drink and gave them vegetables instead. To these four young men, God gave knowledge and understanding of all kinds of literature and learning. I've just created jealousy amongst all of those who are students amongst us. And Daniel could understand visions and dreams of all kinds. At the end of the time set by the king to bring them into his service, the chief official presented them to Nebuchadnezzar. The king talked with them, and he found none equal to Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Notice the names used here, by the way. So they entered the king's service. In every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king questioned them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters in his whole kingdom. And Daniel remained there in this particular place until the first year of King Cyrus. He lived longer, but it's speaking of location here. What a story. What a story. It is very rare for me to give a 3-point sermon. I don't know if I've ever done it. And the reason is that I kept refining and refining and refining what started as 7 points, and I thought I'll lose everybody, to the 3 that I think give expression to the rule of God in this passage in a manner that points to his present glory and that will bring us to Jesus and might help us in the manner in which we pray and approach the real world that we live in. Because I don't want to lose you with details. I want to share with you the 3 points that I then want to unpack from this passage because they are of such importance for you to get. The first point that I want to look at with you is that God disciplines his children to remember his present glory, but more than that, to experience it or to experience it again. God disciplines his children. Now, these are people that have already said they belong to him. To remember that his glory is present and to experience or to experience again his present glory. The second point that I want to make, which I'll come back to later, is that God empowers his faithful followers. Now, we're moving beyond just his children now to his faithful followers, those who in the midst of the real world are still following him faithfully, to bear witness to his present glory in very difficult situations. Now, let me say that second point again. God empowers, he empowers his faithful followers to bear witness to his present glory, not his past glory, not his future glory, but his glory that's present in very difficult situations. And the third point, God graces. Now, I could have said God gifts, but God graces his people to serve him in the real world so that other people would see his present glory. So we see a progression here from disciplining his people to placing in the real world people that faithfully bear witness to his present glory. Why? So that the world might see his present glory. We see that movement in this first chapter of the book of Daniel. And with that, let me come to the first point again, that God disciplines His own children, those who go by His name, that they might remember His present glory and experience it or experience it again. When Jehoiakim was king, we read that he followed the ways of Manasseh, who was a king before him. Let me read a little excerpt about Jehoiakim that you can find in the book of 2 Kings or the book of 2 Chronicles. This is from 2 Kings 23. Jehoiakim was 25 years old when he became king, and he reigned in Jerusalem 11 years. He did evil in the eyes of the Lord, just as his predecessors had done. During Jehoiakim's reign, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, invaded the land, and we go on to read about what we read in the book of Daniel. But listen to this. Surely these things, bringing the people into captivity during Jehoiakim's reign, surely these things happened to Judah according to the Lord's command in order to remove them from his presence. Because of the sins of Manasseh and all he had done, including the bloodshed of innocent blood. Now, you have to hear something about Manasseh to see the seriousness of the situation that we read about in the opening verses of Daniel 1. So you understand that when I speak of the Lord disciplining his children, this is painful. This is costly. This is hard. And sometimes it's because of the sin in his people that is so awful that God shouldn't discipline his children. He should just throw them out. But instead he disciplines them and gives them hope for a future. Let me read about Manasseh. Manasseh was 12 years old when he became king before Jehoiakim. And he reigned in Jerusalem 55 years. He did evil in the eyes of the Lord, following the detestable practices of the nations the Lord had driven out before the Israelites. He rebuilt the high places his father Hezekiah had destroyed. Interesting to have a godly father and be so evil as he was. And he also erected altars to Baal and made an Asherah pole, as Ahab, king of Israel, had done. He bowed down to all the starry hosts and worshipped them. He built altars in the temple of the Lord, of which the Lord had said, "In Jerusalem I will put my name." In the two courts of the temple of the Lord, he built altars to all the starry hosts. He sacrificed his own son in the fire, practiced divination, sought omens, and consulted mediums and spiritists. He did much evil in the eyes of the Lord, arousing his anger. And Jehoiakim, instead of living in the present glory of God, follows in the ways of Manasseh. So what we see as we begin this episode is that God disciplined his people, taking them away from his presence so that during their time of captivity, they would remember, why did we pursue these other gods when we had God's presence with us and we saw his glory amongst us? That they would remember it. But God's burden was for something more. He doesn't want his people just to remember the good old days, to remember the times in history when he was present. Oh, remember those days we saw his glory. But he wants us to experience it again. Why does God discipline his people? That they might experience his presence now. Yes, some of you have experienced the presence of Jesus in profound ways at certain times in your life. But Jesus is always present. What about now? We read in John 1 that Jesus displays the glory of God in many ways, but including in his grace, including in truth. What are you experiencing of his glory now? What are you tasting of His truth? What are you learning of His grace? Are you experiencing the present glory of Jesus now? The Lord disciplines His people, not only that they might remember His present glory, but experience it again. Some of us are so wired to do for God. And yet His presence dims in our life. We even doubt if He is presence. His glory is absent in our life. And we question His grace. We no longer feed on His truth because we got to do for God. He longs that we would be disciplined, that we would remember His past glory, His present glory, but experience it again. Now, I don't want to lose you in this point. So I'm going to give you a personal story that happened just before Good Friday. I won't go into all of the details that were going on in my life, but my soul was not well. And on Good Friday, made the decision, I do have some executive powers here, made the decision that it would be helpful for us to be led into Christ's presence by looking at Psalm 22. And I had made a commitment to spend more time memorizing the Psalms, but because of busyness, I hadn't done as much as I wanted to do. And I thought, I'm going to spend 3 days memorizing Psalm 22. Now, I had other things too. I didn't just wake up in the morning. But I thought, I need to spend time in His presence. Yeah? So I made time. And I'm not a quick memorizer. I have to come back to it again and again. And the psalm started to fill me. And it started to sing for me. And through the psalm, I started to look at Jesus' last days on earth, His death. I thought about His resurrection, the final words of the psalm, "It is finished." Even though the psalm begins with, my God, why have you forsaken me?" That's not where it ends. And I began to think about Jesus and what happened. I began to experience again the present glory of Jesus. Right? He doesn't want us just to remember the good old days. He doesn't want us to just think about others that have experienced it. He longs that His people would be disciplined, that He would discipline us. Sometimes that is so painful. But He longs that we would experience His present glory. But let's go on. In this passage, we see something even more clearly than what I just said. And that's that He empowers His faithful followers to bear witness to His present glory in very difficult situations. He empowers those who remain faithfully following Him in very difficult situations to bear witness to His present glory. Now, as we look at this story, we see in verse 3 that after the king brings the people into Babylon, he orders Ashpenaz to bring some of those from royal families and nobility to help him. He needs some help. And he looks for a certain type of person with certain characteristics, which you see outlined in verse 4, which I'll come back to a little bit later. We also see clearly that Nebuchadnezzar is indifferent and even hostile to this present glory of God. So he takes items from the temple of God and puts them in his temple. And he doesn't even put them in the place of worship. He puts them in the treasure house. They're powerless, right? Obviously this God is powerless because he didn't deliver his people, not knowing that the Lord had given his people into the hands of Nebuchadnezzar, and he wasn't finished with Nebuchadnezzar yet. We see that he changes the names of Daniel and his three friends, and it's helpful for you to know what the names meant. Daniel meant God is judge, and he changes it to the name Bel or Marduk, protect his life. So Daniel's name became Marduk, protect his life. Hananiah, which means the Lord shows grace, was changed to Shadrach, which means under the command of Aku, who was their moon god. Mishael, which means Who is what God is? I love that name. I wish I had that name. Who is what God is? His name was changed to Meshach. Who is what Aku is? And Azariah, which means the Lord helps, was changed to Abednego, servant of Nabu, son of Marduk. Now, this wasn't indifferent. This wasn't an indifferent act. This was a declaration that they were under the authority of their gods. So Nebuchadnezzar did not see the one true God's present glory. But then, we see God empower his faithful followers to bear witness to God's present glory in difficult situations. First, he places men, sorry about that, women, it's just the way this passage goes. He also places women, but that's not what it said here. He places men who remember and still experience God's presence glory. Even though they were taken from God's presence, they knew that God's presence wasn't limited to the temple, but his presence would go with them and his glory would shine. They experienced it. And as we look more at Daniel's story, we'll see all the ways he experienced the present glory of God. And God moves Daniel not to compromise his God-shaped convictions. God had formed in Daniel such a deep desire to please God that he simply refused to eat food and wine that would have first been dedicated, and in the case of some of it, offered to the gods of the Babylonians. So I love the way he asks permission in verse 8. Having resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine, he asked the chief official for permission not to defile himself this way. And then it says, now God caused the chief official to show favor and compassion to Daniel. He then says to Daniel, if I let you do this, I might lose my head. But then he must have told the guard under him, I'm not supposed to do this, but whatever Daniel asks you to do, do. Now, you know how this goes, right? When you're in a public setting and you ask someone for permission and they, you know, they're a bit afraid of their boss and losing their job, and you leave thinking, I don't think this went so good. And then someone else comes up to you that's lower servant or official of the person, and they say, by the way, oh, okay. But the important thing is that God places these men there and he moves Daniel not to compromise his God-shaped convictions. And then, as we saw, he moves certain officials to show both favor and compassion on Daniel and his three friends. And the word when it says, your food is plural, because of you is plural. So he's right away thinking of the friends of Daniel. Now, before we look further at how their witness impacted Nebuchadnezzar at the end of this chapter, let me just pause, because many of you have experienced that. Many of you, in seeking to faithfully follow Jesus in difficult circumstances and are experiencing his present glory, find convictions growing in you. Yeah. Often it comes where you've read something in the Word and it rebukes you and it corrects you, where you start to learn more about what it means to be clothed with Christ and not find your identity and your grades and your work and how you're better than another person, but you start to realize that your calling is to raise up others and see them as better than yourself, and other convictions form. One of the reasons I love to go out for coffee with you, or tea or water or Fanta, is to say, what is God doing in your life? And without doubt, as you share with me, what begins to come out of you are convictions that God is forming in you, values that you're not willing to compromise. And then you'll often say, and I'm not sure how God wants to use me, but he's already using you. He is empowering you to bear witness to the convictions that he's already forming in you. Yeah? To the present glory that you're sharing, because it's him at work in you. There's one man that I went out for coffee that talked about the love of God, and it just burns in him. Another person I went out with that talked about really wanting to sit down with people one-on-one and help them with their questions. And then he wondered, I wonder if I could be used in that. Well, he was helping me with my questions. Right? And what happens is he empowers you and forms these convictions that you're not willing to compromise. Yeah? And they're different. It's not the standard list, but they become so deep in you. Going back to the story that I shared, in 1993, I used to get up early and early and earlier to do administrative work. And I came to realize that unless I spent more time in the presence of Jesus, I would be a mess. I would be a mess. So a conviction that grew in me is that I need to spend time with Him. Now, when I meet with some of you, do I impose it on you? Do I say, you need to be like me? Absolutely not. But as you meet, as you spend time in His present glory, as you experience His present glory, as He reminds you of His present glory through His Word, He forms these convictions in you that you're not willing to compromise. Well, look what happens in verses 18 through 20. When the king, after 3 years, invites Daniel and his three friends before him, what do they bear witness to? Not to their power. He chose them because they were handsome. They showed aptitude for every kind of learning. They were well-informed, quick to understand, and qualified to serve in the king's palace. Okay, those are good things. But look at what's said about them. When he talked with them, he found none equal to them. In every matter of wisdom and understanding, he found them 10 times better than who? Than the magicians and enchanters in the land. This present glory of God is not something that's just a little bit better than the other gods. Nothing compares to the present glory of God. Nothing comes near the present glory of God. Now, Nebuchadnezzar didn't quite get it yet, but he noted it. And we'll come back to that later. In our own lives, He is empowering you to bear witness to His present glory by growing in you His character and these convictions that you are not willing to compromise in the most difficult circumstances. So witnessing isn't just, I need to go do witnessing today. You are bearing witness to what you've experienced of His present glory. You are always bearing witness to your present experience of His glory. And how much more in Christ, who is always with us and who continues to lavish His grace, lavish His truth, lavish His love, that our lives shouldn't display His glory. And very quickly, that leads to the final point I want to make, that God graces His people to serve Him in the real world, that others who don't know Him might see His present glory. And I've already alluded to this point in other things that I've said. He gives to people natural gifting. Yeah? All of you who've been created in the image of God have been created unique and different than another. So why do you spend your days comparing yourself to another? You are not like them. Good for you. Instead of, I'm not like them. Do you see the difference? You are you, created in His image to display His glory with all the natural talents and personalities and quirks that you've been created with. Now, some of us aren't handsome, but I can't help that. But we also see in this passage in verse 17 that God gives special gifting. And it's so true that as people come to Christ, that the Spirit of God in them sometimes strengthens some of their natural gifting, but also sometimes they have gifting that was never there before. Yeah. And sometimes he gives special gifting, as we read about Daniel. And Daniel could understand visions and dreams of all kinds, which was not given in the same way to his three friends. We also see in this passage that God graces his people with training. Training of different kinds. Look at the training Daniel and his three friends had. They had some great training, even if it came under the hands of the Babylonians. But notice clearly what I said in my point. God graces his people to serve him in the real world so that people see his present glory. Never once do you see Daniel and his three friends saying, "Wow, I'm handsome. Wow, have I been exceptionally gifted compared to everyone else? Wow, God has given me this. I'm going to make a name for myself." No way. That's why I want to abandon the word gift to be grace. In Ephesians 4, it says, "But to each one of us, grace has been given as Christ apportioned it." And then it gets into talking about spiritual gifts. Who you are is a gift of his grace. All of you. All of you is a gift of his grace. The fact that you breathe and live is a gift of his grace. To be used to serve him. So that others might see, not, "Wow, is she smart? Wow, she did better on her exams than so-and-so. Wow, is her family going to be proud?" No. To serve him so that others might see the present glory of Jesus. Never once will you see Daniel and his three friends compromise that. And when we want to compromise that, when we want to take credit for the gifts that God has given us, or when we want to devalue ourselves because we don't have as much as the next person, whether we have one talent or ten, may he form us with the uncompromising conviction to serve him, that others might see his present glory. Wow. As we then look at our life in Christ, what a privilege that he disciplines us. Through his word, through his spirit, through his people, to remember his present glory and to experience it or experience it again. That he empowers his faithful followers that they would bear witness to his present glory in difficult situations. And that he graces us to serve him so that others might see and experience his present glory. Which, if you're not with us for the series, Nebuchadnezzar comes to see repeatedly.